wrong place, and you can stay. There's good stuff here. You'll probably learn something interesting. And if you have showed up for the introduction to meditation class, I would just want to welcome you all. One of the things I think about as I prepare to teach meditation, I've taught this class often, is that there is a very, very long lineage of practitioners that have handed these practices down to us. 2,600 years ago, in the time of the Buddha, it was an ancient practice back then, and a very formal, well-defined practice. It goes back probably as long as mankind has been speaking to each other and said, I found this is useful in my life. And one of the great things about being in a lineage like that is that these techniques get refined as they get passed down. That there have been literally millions and millions of hours of meditation that get handed down because certain techniques work very well for some people and others really don't. And the ones that work well have been handed down. The ones that don't work well have been discarded. And that as new techniques come along, they get kind of experimented with, refined in that same milieu, and continually get, brought into the present day. And that's what you find as we teach meditation, you know, nowadays, that there's been a transition from the ancient Tibetan practices into something that fits Western lifestyle a little bit better, and that's more what we'll be teaching today. We're going to be teaching from a secular perspective, meditation can be done very separate from a spiritual life, and it can be an essential part of one's spiritual life. So we're presenting it in a more secular fashion so that it is accessible. And we would encourage you that if you have a spiritual practice, to just kind of see where this fits in. So a few basic things. We're going to go from 6:30 to 8:30. We'll have a break about an hour through the time. Bathrooms are downstairs, and then you just have to wander and you'll find it. It's not too hard. I'm just kind of curious, why did everyone show up tonight? What are you looking for? What makes you interested in meditation? Any takers on that one?
I've been meaning to try and do this for a while, so it's like I want to do this for a long time, but I'm an expert at procrastinating, so I put it off for quite some time, but I also realized that my brain is pretty cluttered. I have a lot on my seemingly never-ending to-do list, which just seems to get a little longer. And so I juggle a lot, and so I feel like I need better tools to manage an unreasonable task load.
Yeah, that's good. When you're wanting to meditate, it's really good to have some instruction. It's kind of like trying to play the piano if you don't have a book or don't have any instruction. You can kind of pound around. You might get a few tunes out of it, but you're not going to progress very far as a pianist. To have a good teacher and a good set of practices to do is incredibly helpful, and that's what I'm hoping we can offer today. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that? Yeah.
I would really like to know the difference, because there are so many different divisions of Buddhism or Buddhist technique, and I've been always fascinated by the Tibetan monks and that, because I wanted to know the difference between the practice or the philosophy.
It's actually quite interesting, because a lot of times when someone wants to approach a Buddhist practice, you don't quite know where to go with that. You know, you realize that there are different traditions. And, you know, how does one choose? Now, we're not going to really be dwelling on that too much in this class. But if you want to come up on the break or after class, I'd be happy to talk to you about that.
Well, one of the things that I've been sort of disappointed is that I've approached different aspects of Buddhist practice, like Zen and Buddhism mm-hmm. and this and that. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to various people with them, mm-hmm. the monks and the nuns and so forth. And I haven't really gotten a full, complete, the unifying kind of knowledge that would help me. Mm-hmm. And because, I guess I'll talk to you about this later, but privately, but I've had some very experiences.
Yeah. Well, the questions you bring up are very good questions. So let's talk later about that. One more, anyone else? Thoughts on what you want to get out of class?
I'm a big fan of Ajahn Brahm. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. Mm-hmm. He does Dharma Talks. You can look mm-hmm. at him on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And he sometimes does meditation. And I have no idea what mm-hmm. I'm doing, but I want to figure it out, so that's fine.
Yeah, good, good. You find a lot of Eastern spiritual traditions center their practices around meditation because it gives you, meditation gives you a stable mind, a quiet mind, a calm mind, a relaxed mind. And that is the mind that is kind of open to spiritual realizations. And it's really a nice practice if you are on a spiritual path. So, meditation is essentially resting the mind in one place and having the skill set to hold it there and not have it just wander off. Because that's kind of what the mind does naturally. Thoughts arise. That's what the mind does, you know, for us. And it can be very good in certain situations and kind of agitating, confusing, disorienting, you know, as well. So the practice of meditation kind of trains the mind to be comfortable resting on one object. And that's what we're going to be focusing on here. We're going to be focusing on something called single-pointed meditation, which is where you really find one definite thing to rest the mind on and then keep it there. There are other kinds of meditation. We'll talk a little bit about that, but that's going to be our focus today. What I want to do right now is have us just sit for a few minutes and meditate as much as we can right now so that we have kind of a sense of where we're starting from. So what we're going to do is find a comfortable posture, and we're going to rest the mind, rest the attention on the breath. It kind of brings up the point in a way, well, what is the attention? So let's kind of explore that. I want everyone to close your eyes. And I want you to bring your attention to your left knee, to the tactile sensations of the left knee. We would say that your awareness is resting in that at that spot, on those sensations. And now bring your awareness to the tip of your tongue, to the tactile sensations at the tip of the tongue. And now bring the awareness to the right thumb, to the tactile sensations that you experience there. You can open your eyes. So that thing that moved is the awareness, sometimes we'll call it the attention. And the attention has a way of wandering. You'll notice that as you try to hold it in one place. So these are techniques to get the mind to be still, to stay put in a comfortable way. So let's just see how we do right now. Sit comfortably, close your eyes, and take as your object of meditation the breath, and experience the tactile sensations of the breath as they arise in the body. Rest your mind there. If you find that the awareness is wandering off, just bring it back to the breath. And we'll do that for a few minutes. So we can open our eyes. It's really nice to see that people seem to be able to sit still, which is a real good sign. But how's the mind? How many people found that when they settled in on the breath, that their mind just stayed put? Raise your hand if you had that experience. Okay, raise your hand if it wasn't quite, if your mind wandered. That's usually people's experience. The good news is that the sort of absorption that the mind can have on an object is something that all of us have experienced. When you're watching a good movie, you know, your mind is very focused there, listening to a song that you just love. Your mind will be very still. If you've ever watched a child play, you know, with a bug, and they'll just watch it crawl around for an hour, and it's just that ability to really rest in one place. So we all have that. And what we're going to do is talk about, you know, how to be able to call that up, how to call up that quality of absorption of the mind. Most of the things we talk about in this course are teachings that have been handed down, that are part of our lineage. Occasionally, I'll throw something in that's just my own, and I'll let you know when that is the case. So, we're going to be going over several things today. Posture. Which is a vital part of meditation, because you want to be able to park your body and not think about it when you're meditating. Because if the body is uncomfortable, if you're sitting in a posture that is straining your body, you're going to know it. It's going to become a distraction. And two things happen. One is your mind gets pulled away from the object of meditation by your physical discomfort. And the second thing is, you don't enjoy meditation that much. We want to prevent that. So we pay a lot of attention to posture. Like I say, we'll be meditating on the breath. And really, in the beginning, meditating on the breath is the practice of returning to the breath once the mind wanders away. Because that's what the mind does. And the practice of knowing how to bring the awareness back to the object of meditation will strengthen the mind, will strengthen that quality of the mind, so that it just becomes easier and easier to do. We're going to talk about the benefits of meditation. We're going to talk about some of the problems with meditation, and focus especially on one of the primary ones that comes up in the beginning of practice, and kind of the classic antidotes about what to do with that. And we're going to set you up for a home meditation practice so that you can start tomorrow, or tonight if you prefer, meditating on a daily basis. So let's talk a little bit about the object of meditation. There are a lot of different things you can rest your mind on. And there are certain classic objects of meditation. Some of them are very inert, like a rock, design on the floor. Some of them are a little bit more active, a candle flame. Sometimes you will meditate on an image in your mind, and it can be a very static image, or it can be a very vivid, lifelike sort of image. But we choose these certain things to rest the mind on, depending on what we want to get out of that meditation practice. We find that the breath is a very good object of meditation. The reason it's a good object of meditation is that it has a certain rhythm to it that's repetitive, that's consistent, that's rhythmic. And it's easy to follow that way. It can catch our interest. Because of that rhythm, because there's some variation in the breath, it's interesting enough to hold our attention. So we've got this good balance between something that's consistent and something that's, you know, somewhat interesting because it is changing. The other great thing about the breath is that we can always know where it is. We're very comfortable with it. We're very used to the breath. We know what the breath is like. And that makes it a very easy thing to come back to once we lose it. Thus, they say that the breath is especially good for a wandering mind, which I think describes a lot of us. We live in a culture that is very agitated, where we get a great deal of stimulation. And we're training our minds as we go to be constantly seeking more stimulation. So, like that. Different objects of meditation have the quality of being either coarse or subtle. And a coarse object of meditation is one that's very obvious, like a gross physical sensation. The breath probably falls more into that sort of category. A more subtle object of meditation could be, say, the thoughts that arise in the mind. The benefit of choosing a coarse object of meditation is that it's very accessible. It's easier to grasp onto. The mind does not wander from it quite as easily. The benefit of a subtle object of meditation is that it tends to refine the mind at a deeper level, so that as you practice meditation, you'll typically move from the breath to more subtle objects of meditation, because there's a certain push to develop a more refined ability to stay in one place, that you have less stimulation of the mind, it settles the mind, it allows you to go deeper. So that's over time what we'll be working with. One of the things that you'll realize happens as you meditate is that you're resting on your object of meditation and your mind just starts to wander away. And usually it develops into a storyline. A storyline is a sequence of thoughts that just seem to be kind of built on top of each other. And it goes something like, you're on the breath, and then kind of your stomach growls a little bit, and you kind of realize, ooh, I'm hungry. I wonder if there's any food in the freezer. God, I hope I paid the electric bill this month. I wonder how my bank account's doing. Did I deposit that check? You know, and the mind just kind of jumps from one thought to the other. So we see this happen constantly, that the mind just gets shanghaied. Does anyone know what that word shanghaied means? Raise your hands if you have. In San Francisco, around the 1850s, there was this booming city that just arose out of almost nothing. And they had a lot of traffic from overseas, from China, from the Orient, from up and down the coast. These boats would come into the San Francisco Bay, and they had a gold rush going on. And a lot of these sailors would get to San Francisco, they'd hear these stories in the bars about how wonderful these, you know, the opportunities are to find gold, to strike it rich, and they just take off. So these boats, they wanted to go off and sail, you know, the next day, but all of a sudden have no crew. So the way they got a crew is that they'd go into the bars and they'd find all the drunk sailors, all these guys who have passed out in the corner, and they just carry them onto the ship. And when these guys woke up, they were on a slow boat to China. And that's kind of what, you know, what happens to our attention. It gets shanghaied. It gets picked up without us knowing it, and it's just off somewhere. Oh, good. Let's talk about posture. Let's see. Oh, very good.
You think posture is sort of like riding a bike, where, you know, once you kind of are able to do the complete cross-legged, or just get a comfortable posture, if you sort of stop meditating for a little while, you can come right back to that? Because I don't find that.
I think it's a reasonable analogy, but I think it falls short in a couple of ways. One is that gravity works against posture a lot, and it's very common, especially in the beginning of your meditation practice, to start out in a really good posture and just start kind of sad. And you realize you're kind of like, and then you kind of, you know, and then you pop up, and you kind of, you know, align again, and so on. So I think it's a little bit more volatile than that skill of riding a bike. The second thing is that it changes a bit in terms of your daily circumstance. If you have a little bit of back pain, or if your knee hurts, you're going to have to adjust to it. So I think those are certain qualities of posture that are different in that way. Good. The first thing you want to think about with posture is what's supporting you. Is there you're either in a chair right now, or I think most people are sitting on cushions if you're not. You want a cushion or a chair to keep your hips and pelvis, to give them a stable foundation, essentially. There's different cushions around that facilitate that in different ways. If you're sitting on the floor, mostly what you want is a cushion that puts your pelvis and your legs at the proper height. You can get something like this. It's a travel cushion. It's very dense. It doesn't sink in too much. You can have bigger cushions like this. This is really good if you want more height. What determines that? And pretty much your body style, how flexible you are, how old you are, how heavy you are. You know, if you've had injuries, you know, and so on. This is a smaller size. I think you've probably seen there's one of a more common size right there. You can use things like this to adjust your height. But you're going to find that that issue of height determines a lot about your comfort. So it's something that, as you're starting to practice meditation, you want to play around with a lot. You want to try different cushions, and you want to be really aware of how much comfort or discomfort arises from the use of that cushion.
And we have these buckwheat ones. These ones. And they're nice because you can kind of squish them around until they get how you want.
Materials are different. These, like the one next to it here, is filled with rags. They're pretty firm. Mm-hmm. They get flat very easily. The buckwheat ones are nice because you just kind of settle into it, and it's just a real comfortable position. It can give you a little broader support. Problem with the buckwheat ones, or the rice hull ones sometimes you'll find, is that the hulls tend to shift occasionally. They'll settle, and then your posture changes, and you have to kind of readjust. You know, it's just kind of one of those things to play with. But I would recommend that everyone, while you're here, just try different cushions, and we'll probably pass them around in different meditations that we do. You want your clothing to be... one more thing. When you're sitting in a chair, very good to have something like this, a wedge that tips your pelvis a little forward, because you're going to have the tendency in a chair to just kind of lean back into it. These are fairly inexpensive, $4 or $5. They're a little difficult to find. You can find them online. And you're going to pass that.
So you put it on the seat?
Yeah, you just put it on the chair.
Against the back.
Like this.
The seat.
Yeah, exactly. But if you do a lot of sitting, your meditation, sitting in chairs, is just a real good prop to have because it makes your posture more comfortable, yeah, essentially. Clothing, you want to wear loose clothing. You want, as you sit in whatever position you have, to have your clothing really loose enough to where there's absolutely no restriction in what posture you need to achieve from your clothing. Jeans make it real hard to sit on the floor. If you're wearing jeans, you may kind of find that the seats, just that the chairs, just do a little bit better for you that way. You want your clothing to be warm enough for the environment you have, and that changes a lot. I know when I'm at a retreat, a lot of times I'll bring two pairs of socks, you know, to keep my feet warm, a really warm pair for the morning and the evening meditations, and kind of a lighter pair for the afternoon because the temperature in the room changes. And it's important because being too hot or too cold is the sort of thing that's going to, you know, take your mind away. And, you know, like that. You want fabric that's going to be comfortable for you. So you're going to tend to find that when you meditate, you're just going to almost reflexively just make sure you're in the appropriate clothing, you know, for that. So let's talk about the 7 points of posture. These 7 points, there's handouts that are we're going to send out to you on this. These 7 points are something that is going to be very, something that you refer to very often. Because whenever your posture starts to get out of line, it's just very quick to kind of go through the 7 points, and then you're just lined up in a real good way again. So let's start with the legs and the hips. When you're seated on a cushion, you want the legs to be supported by the cushion beneath your legs, and you want your hips to be supported by what you're sitting on. These big flat square things are referred to as zabutons. They're very available. They have the benefit of keeping your ankles from getting irritated by a hard floor. They keep you warm. A folded blanket will do a very similar job, but I kind of recommend that if you want to develop a meditation practice, you acquire a zabuton. Likewise, I would say the cushion, sometimes called a zafu, is a very good thing to acquire. And again, play around with them to see which one's going to work for you best. The posture of the legs generally are going to be crossed. You can, I can't really demonstrate this. You can have your legs crossed.
Do you want us to move the table?
Pardon?
Do you want us to move the table?
No, I think we're okay. You can have your legs crossed just one in front of the other. Most people do the left forward from the right one. You can do a half lotus position, which is where you have one foot resting up in the crook of the knee and the other one. Or you could, if you have a great deal of practice, go into a full lotus, which is that classic style where one foot is brought up into the opposite knee and then you bring the other one up into the opposite knee as well. Can anyone demonstrate a full lotus here? Does anyone have that ability? Nah, yeah.
The imagery behind you, what is it?
Well, there you go. Thank you.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough position to maintain, and I think the vast majority of practitioners are going to be uncomfortable in that position.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Woo!
Meditating here, I don't know.
It has the benefit of being very stable, but it's very easy to develop pain in your ankles and your knees and so on, and you just want to avoid anything about your posture that has that level of discomfort. So find a position for your legs that just suits you and what your body is capable of doing. If you're in a chair, you want your knees just about level with your hips. And you typically will need to put either a cushion or a blanket under your feet or something under your hips so that you kind of come up to that perfect sort of height. It's something to play with. Do we have blankets around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there more in the back? Could somebody just bring out a bunch? Because if you're in a chair, I'm going to want you to grab a blanket and just kind of play with that. You know, do you need something under your hips to get that perfect alignment where the thighs are just horizontal to the ground? Or do you need to be resting your feet on something to do that?
Mark, yeah. Can the knees be wider than the hips, or do they have to stay together in the same alignment? My hands are kind of pulled out.
You're going to find that if you let them just kind of splay out, it makes the posture a little less stable. But having said that, it can be just very, just a very natural, as you found, way to sit. So I would say play around with that.
Because when I keep them straight, then I develop a lot of tension in the hips,
which is not
sure
good.
Way to get out.
Yeah, because that tension is going to be a distraction to you over time. So I would say it might be that if you got a wedge like this, try that and see if that changes that. But that may, by aligning the hips better, just bring the knees in a little bit more. So you can report back to us fairly soon.
Better.
That's awesome. I've used it before. It's amazing.
This is nice.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you can get that at the rep upholstery store, because they sell them.
Probably online is going to be your best bet. They're hard to find. I would get them from chiropractic supply stores. But most people don't have access. You know, that way. But I think you can find them online pretty well.
And what is it called?
A foam wedge is what you'd order. So moving up, so we've got our pelvis stable, the legs supporting the pelvis. The spine, you want your spine to be erect and balanced. That means not too much forward and not too much back. Because the amount of energy that you're going to have to put into maintaining the posture where you're leaning back like this is going to become apparent very quickly. And it's the sort of thing that when you're in an improper posture, it really takes about a minute or two and you realize, I'm just not going to be able to stay here. You know, it's just too much strain. And then you kind of adjust, and, you know, that sort of thing. That's why it's good to have your props already set up, to have your cushion at the right height, and your, you know, if you're in a chair, your knees at the proper height, because you don't want to be moving around too much. It's just a distraction. But you do need to occasionally adjust your posture. Let's see. When you're in a chair, there's going to be the tendency to want to just lean back in the chair. It tends to cause dullness in the mind, and it tends to not allow the back muscles to develop in a way that they need to in order to support you better. So we like to have people, when you're sitting in a chair, scoot forward just a bit so that your hips are away from the back of the chair and that your back is not resting against that. If you don't have a proper position of the seat, i.e. if you don't have a wedge or the seat is just, you know, not quite supporting you. You know, it's going to be a problem that way. So the next thing, we've done the hips, the spine, getting to the shoulders and the arms. The shoulders, you want kind of relaxed in a way where they're back and down, because it opens the chest, makes breathing easier, it makes a more relaxed body. When you're kind of collapsed like this, it compresses the breath, it really binds up the energy in the body, it makes meditation more difficult. So what I usually suggest is that you, when you start your meditation, you bring your shoulders up to your ears, back, squeeze your shoulder blades together, and then just let your shoulders drop. And it really just gets them in the right place. When your shoulders are in the right place, your spine's in the right place, you want to find where to rest your hands. The position of the hands pretty much dictates where your shoulders are and how your spine is. And what you want to do is first align the spine, align the shoulders up, back, relaxed, and then just find, as I maintain that posture, where do the hands fall on the legs? I would suggest playing around with that a bit. You'll find that if you, in fact, do this now, just rest your hands on your legs in that way, and move your fingers about a half inch forward, just a little bit that way. Is there a sense that that changes your posture? I think most people will find that it does. So it's something to play around with, and again, you're going to find that every body is different, and it'll be a good technique for adjusting your posture. Where are the hands? Slide them forward, slide them back, you know, like that. So hips, spine, shoulders. Head position is important. We want the head looking pretty much as if we're gazing towards the horizon. A lot of times your eyes will be closed or you'll be gazing down. So it's not that that's where our eyes are, but you want your head in that neutral sort of position, and it's best achieved by just looking out at the horizon. You're right there. If the head's too low like this, it tends to compress the breath, compress the energy in here. If it's too back like this, to scatter the mind. The mind tends to wander more when the head's back like this. If you find that you're a little sleepy, a little kind of dull in the mind as you're meditating, lifting the chin just like a degree or two, just a tiny bit, will kind of bring us a little bit more energy. If you're finding that you're too agitated, your mind's just bouncing around when you're meditating, dropping the chin down, just, again, just a degree or two. Excellent technique for adjusting that aspect of the mind. So, hips, spine, shoulders, head, the eyes. You want the eyes to, they could be either open or closed. The benefit of having them closed is that it's much less distraction. The downside of having them closed is that it tends to make you sleepy, because we associate closed eyes with rest and sleep. You can crack them just halfway where they're just, you know, you can just almost see your eyelids as you meditate. The benefit for to that is that it's less, it makes you less sleepy. The downside is that it does tend to make you more distracted. So if you're having one of those days where you just can't get your mind to settle down, you know, close your eyes. Generally, you know, I find for myself, closed eyes work very well. So I would recommend generally taking that as your practice, but again, experiment and see. If your eyes are partially opened, you want your gaze lower down. If you have your gaze right at the horizon, it's quite distracting. So you want to just lower your gaze. Exactly how much lower? Really, you hear a lot of different opinions. To a point about 6 to 10 feet in front of you is typical. So I would say work with that. The jaw, you want the jaw to be relaxed, mouth to be closed. You will occasionally find meditation instruction where they will recommend that you have your mouth partially opened. It is a technique that's taught. But what we find is that when you do that, the mouth tends to get dry. And then you need to kind of swallow. You get some saliva going there. And then you keep needing to swallow. And that becomes a distraction. So the closed mouth just gives you less distraction that way. You want the jaw to be relaxed so that the teeth are not quite touching, but not so much that you're kind of, you know, slack-jawed like that. You want to, one of the things you want to just tune into is there a feeling of tension in the jaw as you meditate? And if there is, just kind of let those muscles relax a bit. Just focus the awareness and just tell them to relax. The tongue. You want to park the tongue. A convenient place to park it is right behind the upper teeth, so the tongue is just lightly touching the hard palate, just behind the front teeth on top. The reason you park the tongue is that movement of the tongue will stimulate the production of saliva, and then you swallow, and swallowing is kind of a tightening of the muscles to pull the saliva back. That has the quality of stimulating more saliva production, and then you just get into that distraction. It's just, yeah. So it just prevents that from happening. If you're sitting for a long period of time, you'll find if you're swallowing a lot of saliva, you'll tend to get thirsty after a while, and again, it's a distraction. So we're going to just sit for a bit in a couple of minutes. I just want to bring up a few more points. We're going to be following the breath. You don't want to control the breath because it makes for sort of an artificial situation. And it's hard to follow the breath if you're trying to control. It's like kind of who's leading here. And as you're focusing on the breath, you'll find that you want to make the breath big. The great thing is, you really don't need to. You don't need to do anything with the breath. You just want to observe it come in. You want to observe it go out. And because our mouth is closed, we'll be generally breathing through the nose. That is your option. Hand positions, there's a variety of hand positions you could take. I just like to rest my hands on the knees like this. And again, you just find that sweet spot by getting your spine in the right place, shoulders back, and then just see where do the hands fall. You can take a mudra. This is a very common one. This is very relaxing to the mind. It connects certain energy channels. You can try it and see. Sometimes it's more of a distraction to hold that, you kind of see how it is for you. A very common one in Zen Buddhism is to have the left hand down, rest the right hand in, bring the thumbs together either so that they're touching or that they're a little bit apart and kind of barely touching. And actually, as you do this and they're not quite touching, you can almost feel a sort of energy current between them. If you have your hands like this, you just want to tuck them into your lap here. Oftentimes you're going to need a support here, a pillow, something like that, or they just kind of fall into, you know, onto the floor. So again, a very good meditation position, but you may need some support for that. Mm-hmm. Good. A couple comments about meditating in a group. There's a great benefit to meditating in a group, and that is that when we're in a group, everyone's resting their mind in a certain way, and there's a certain energy to that. And it really helps stabilize the mind. You're going to find that if it's a good, quiet group to meditate in, that you're going to have very good meditations that way. It also reinforces the amount of time you're going to sit. Sometimes you've got a busy day going on, we say, okay, I'm going to sit for 30 minutes. You know, 15 minutes in, if those thoughts just keep going at you, oh gosh, I got to do this, I got to do this, sometimes you just get up and you wander off and, you know, you kind of lack your full meditation practice. A group really reinforces a quality meditation time. The downside of a group is that when you're in a group, really important to stay still because you don't want to be distracting people. So you have to be especially conscious of starting out in a real good position so that you don't have to move around that much. And when you start to itch, when you start to get uncomfortable, you need to just kind of deal with that in a different way so you're not disturbing people. I want to talk a little bit about scratching itches. Find some place in your body that itches a little bit and scratch it a few times. Everyone do that now. Just right now. Just find a place in your body and scratch. And what do you find happens?
It keeps itching.
Keeps itching, and you find another place in your body that you want to itch as well. And I think everyone has to do that a little bit before you realize it just doesn't help. So if you need to, do it, but pay attention to that thought that is it really keeping your body from itching? And what you find is that it really doesn't, and at a certain point, you get a fairly good skill set of just having an itch and just realizing, my body's itching. Sometimes that becomes the object of your meditation. Still itching, because you can't think about anything else. And then you just, and it kind of goes away on its own. Sometimes you have to scratch it. Sometimes it just goes away, and then you kind of get back to the object of meditation. You will find that in a group situation, it's okay to just realign your posture. To when you realize you just kind of collapsed, just very quietly, just hips, spine, shoulders, head, eyes, jaw, tongue. There I am again. Very easy thing to do, and it's not distracting the people around you. So let's sit for 5 minutes. And just really concentrate on posture. So everyone, find a good posture and take a couple minutes to do that. If you need props, grab props. You want to sense that your body is in balance. There's a story of the Buddha when he was very close to attaining enlightenment. He has been through years and years of different spiritual practices. And he thought, you know, there's nothing else I need to do in order to gain enlightenment, then just sit in meditation. He plopped himself down by under a tree by the Ganges River, and he promised himself, I am not going to move until I gain enlightenment. And I like that sort of image, that when you take your posture, you can kind of have that frame of mind that I could just stay here till I'm enlightened, and that'd be okay. And here you find, maybe that's not, maybe your body's not quite well trained, but it's a really good place to start. So everyone, go through the 7 points on your own, get into a good posture of meditation, and let's again try to rest our thoughts. Rest the attention, rest our awareness on the tactile sensations of the breath. And it could be a fairly gross, full body sensation of rising and falling. It could be in one particular spot that catches your awareness. But rest your attention on the breath. And when you realize that your mind has wandered off, very gently just bring the awareness back. And we'll go for 5 minutes. open your eyes. When I end the meditation session, even if it's just 5 minutes, I like to just stretch a little bit, a little kind of twist from one side to the other, stretch your arms up over your head. It's just a nice way to slowly come back into the room. So let's do this. Let's take a short break, about 6 minutes. And before we get up, there is something we need to attend to. While that's getting set up, let me talk about knee props. It's the one thing I forgot to talk about in posture, is that sometimes when you're sitting cross-legged, your knees aren't going to rest easily on the ground. And it's good to have a cushion or so under it to be able to rest them on. And...
And it's your birthday.
I tried to avoid this.
And he tried to not tell us what we found out. Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jeremy. Happy birthday to you.
Okay, see you back in your seats in 6 minutes.
There's tea and there's snacks, so help yourself. And there's desserts in the closet. We should
talk about here.
Up on the shelf right in front of you, Jay. Yeah. That white
and
box.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, that yes. Box, yeah, they're kind of, they're big, so we should share them all. And delicious. And gluten-free.
Yeah.
How's it going?
I'm good.
I'm doing good.
Are
you coming to the Peloton on Sunday?
Yeah, the
Austin
thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Planning on it.
You like
it? Yeah, that's a different lesson.
Thank you.
Did you do anything?
What kind of announcements?
No, not yet.
Just about our upcoming events, who we are, who we like.
Okay. So what would that be?
Well, you'll find out if you want them. Do you want special access?
I'm just curious. Because I haven't done an event with you guys before.
Did you find out because of me, or how did you find out?
Maya Wallace sent out a thing.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
She sends out, she has a daily note of what's up.
Oh, cool. That's like crazy to me. Like everything that's going on in Sacramento.
Well, like
Andor.
Yeah, I'll forward it to you.
I'm interested to see.
It's just a cool thing to check out.
And so you got it, and you're like, I'm in meditation.
Yeah, well, I mean, I work a lot of them, so.
I know. Well, that's what got me here the first time, because when we do a good lecture, I'm just right here.
So there's brownie, there's like a cobbler thing.
Yeah, I like sure.
This is one with poppy thing.
You know, how many cool are there?
I know, it's like hard.
How is the volume? Have I brought it up to your head?
I think so. I know my grandma has trouble hearing, and he put it on the back. But I think so.
But it's like loud enough like you can hear what I'm saying.
Yep.
Or I could try to
But I didn't see a bunch of grown-ups.